He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Tuesday. It is the Tuesday, December 9th edition of the Best Stocks Now show, where everyone is wondering what Jerome Powell ate for breakfast this morning. How heavy is his briefcase? Did he go the same route that he always goes to work? The Fed meeting begins today, and meanwhile, the Dow is up 123. This is Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, and it's the Best Stocks Now show. The NASDAQ, however, is down 33. We call that a mixed market. One of the major indexes up, one down, and the S&P is up 9. So two out of three are up. Cautiously optimistic. I could just tell you this. The market has baked into the cake a rate cut tomorrow. And if it doesn't get a rate cut tomorrow, I think there's going to be a massive temper tantrum by the market. So we shall see. Tomorrow will be interesting. The Russell 2000 is up 5 points right now. The bond market, we're down a couple of basis points. But we've seen a sell-off in the bond market recently, and it's tied to Japan mostly. We hit 4.17 yesterday. That's the highest we've been in a while. Today we're at 4.15. Gold's got a little rally going on today, along with the gold stocks. Oil cannot get any kind of sustainable rally going at all. And Bitcoin continues to struggle. It's trading around 90,000 today. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, a nationwide fee-based only firm. And I'm here with Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst. The Fed meeting, the much-awaited, the much-anticipated meeting begins today. I don't know what time, but they gather and they talk and they look at employment numbers. They look at inflation numbers, the price of eggs.
They'll be debating this time.
I think, I don't think it'll be a unanimous decision by any means, and I think it could be closer than we think, and it wouldn't shock me to see no rate cut tomorrow. Two reasons for that. Well, Trump's reasons are, he says that Powell is not very smart, which I don't think helps.
He said, or he doesn't like Trump.
Right? And he doesn't like Trump. We know that for a fact. His IQ, I have no idea. I just don't think he's very intuitive. You know, there's a difference between IQ and common sense and being intuitive. Sometimes you got to lean towards the intuitive and the common sense, when the facts of the matter say something else.
He seems to get that paralysis by analysis, I think.
Yeah, way just overthinking it. Just look at the price of a loan and how it's hurting young people. And, inflation. Yes, the prices remain high, but they've moderated. And, gasoline and the few things are coming down, not a whole lot. Egg prices came way down, and gasoline prices have come way down. So anyways, we sit here today, we wait the Fed decision tomorrow, along with the presser that he does after that, taking questions. And generally speaking, he's not very good at those, but he does get his message across, his very hawkish message, which I would expect again tomorrow, saying, well, you know, we're going to be trouble in January and February. We have to be very careful. We've still got inflation out there, and that always, sometimes that does more damage to the market than the actual decision itself. You know, I don't think we can win tomorrow, Barry, because the market usually sells the rumor. So the rumor is right now we're going to get a rate cut. So we get the rate cut, and it's like, okay, sell the rumor.
And it's priced in, right? I mean, I think it's priced in. Quarter point has been priced in. I was talking to a client a couple of days ago. I think the biggest difference, right, is going to be what does he say in the press conference, and you know that's something that can go either way, right?
I mean, I don't think so. He's never been dovish in those press.
Well,
conferences.
He's usually not great in the press conference to begin with, so.
I just don't know that we can win tomorrow. But having said that, we look at individual stocks on a daily basis. There were some good. There were some bad yesterday. It was a pretty quiet day.
You said bonds where the action was. It's been wild in the bond market.
Not good.
No, I mean, like 10 days ago, we were right at 4% or under
3.99. Yeah.
And we're at 4.17 today. So
I know. And a lot of that's coming out of Japan. And it could be, who knows, maybe that's our Pearl Harbor out there. Japan's economy continues to fall apart and collapse. Their problem is they don't have enough young people to support the old people. They're seeing inflation for the first time. They're talking about a rate hike for the first time in over two decades. So anyways, there were some good stocks yesterday. CrowdStrike looked pretty good. Goldman Sachs was breaking out to new highs. Robinhood was rebounding. Rolls-Royce had a good day. Baidu had a good day with their splitting off their chip division. And that's where there's big news today is in the chip market, which we'll get to. Well, we'll just do that right now. The U.S., they've been given, NVIDIA's been given the green light to sell the H200 chips to China. But the problem is, and I said it yesterday when I heard the news after the close of the market, China doesn't really want those chips. They feel like their chips are at that level. I mean, these are not the Blackwell chips that they really want. These are the H200s, and China feels like, you know what? And they've said this before, so I don't think that's really big news.
Although they want stuff built on their platform and their technology, because then they can export that to other places as well, instead of just, you know, piggybacking off of, you know, some American technology, right? We've seen them adapt over time, right? And whether they're, you know, copying, replicating, or inventing, right, and catching up, whether it was Huawei or, you know, certainly in the phone space, electric vehicles, certainly, right? It's they want to fuel their own industry, right? And you know, some of that they'll use the chips if they can, but they'd prefer to certainly build their own infrastructure, right?
Yeah, I think the news channels got it wrong. Oh, this is a big thing for NVIDIA. They're going to be China. They're going to be allowed to sell into China. Well, look at the reaction by NVIDIA stock today. It's down 0.5% because really it's no news at all. Even though they've been restricted from those chips recently. They don't really want them, and China's telling their companies not to buy them because the U.S. is going to get 25% of all sales, our country, in exchange. But I don't really think it's a news item at all. It's just kind of a negative news item. And in the meantime,
NVIDIA's guidance, by the way, they used zero. For China, and I think they realize that even if they can sell these into them, that China doesn't want. They're just going to prevent their own companies from actually purchasing them.
Yeah, so. And I saw that today China's trade surplus crossed the $1 trillion mark. Okay, that's their trade surplus. Now we run a big trade deficit here in the U.S. China has proved that they are the biggest manufacturing force in the entire world because they've made up what the tariffs have not really worked against China all that much because they continue to run a huge trade surplus. They found other markets for their goods, and we still buy a lot from China. But it has evened the playing field somewhat. But there's been losers also in the whole thing here in the U.S. I would say the U.S. farmer for sure has been a loser. He's looking to write a check to the farmers for some $12 billion. But I was really surprised to see that China's trade surplus has grown now to one. It hit the $1 trillion mark so far in 2025. But it hasn't hurt the stock market. Okay, that was the main point I was making with my article back on April 8th of this year. I think that I think the tariffs are going to work. And in a lot of ways they have as leverage. But my main point was, I don't think they're going to impact the earnings of our U.S. companies. And outside of a few companies, they've had little to no effect on the earnings. The S&P 500 earnings have actually gone up higher. The estimates have gone higher since April 8th than lower. So I was right, again. That it was not going to have any impact. And let's not forget the S&P 500 was at 4,800 at that time. And if you listen to me, we went all in, man, guns blazing. And now here we are at 6,800. Where do we go from here? We'll be right back. Here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, the prediction markets, 89.4% is where they're at on the rate cut, highly anticipated rate cut tomorrow. China could limit access to NVIDIA's H200 chips despite Trump's nod. And so I really think, just looking at the response of NVIDIA's stock today, I would say that it's pretty much a non-story. We've got, guess who's facing an EU antitrust probe? Google, over alleged use of online content for AI purposes. Now, yesterday,
I guess it's going to be Microsoft, so close enough.
It's right, going to be one of the
big
ones.
Tech companies, yeah.
Which, it's the EU's ATM machine. Fine them. They pay the fine. They cash it over, cash the check over at the EU, which caused Elon Musk yesterday to call for the disbandment of the EU. He thinks it ought to just be disbanded, and it was not a good idea because he got hit. Yeah. X got hit with a $150 million fine. What is X's market cap? You know, that's a big, big, big fine, and I don't think they like Elon Musk, so they use that, you know, these rules and antitrust probes against people they don't like.
Well, that's the old adage. That's the second, that's the third part of the, you know, the United States innovates, the, you know, Chinese replicate, and the European, you know, Europeans litigate. So
that's right.
We touched them all so far today.
Yes. Well, oil. Let's just talk about oil. You know, I'm looking for some new leaders to start to emerge as we get ready to flip the calendar here in 3 weeks to a new year. I'm not seeing that. I had some hopes that maybe the oil patch, I saw some breakouts there over the last few months, but there just fails to be any kind of a sustainable rally. We have ample supply of oil out there, number one. Number two, the demand has not really increased. Number three, we're going full speed ahead with the nuclear ambitions. The only thing that's keeping oil up really is the conflict between between Russia and the Ukraine, which Ukraine has now come back with another proposal. They do not want to cede land to Russia. And Russia said you can either cede this last 15% of the Donbas region or we're going to continue to fight for it. Take your pick. And so that seems to be on hold. But anyways,
in that overhang, you know, if that ever gets solved to some any degree where Russia could continue, could begin legally exporting oil again, that's a supply overhang, right? That's just waiting to sap prices at any point in time, right?
And when Trump says prices are coming down, I mean, that's really the one thing he can point to is gasoline. It's certainly not ribeye steaks at Costco or different things, a loaf of bread and most things. The prices have not come down. I haven't seen the menu come down at Hall's Chop House since I've lived here, Barry.
No.
When I came here, a prime rib dinner was $36. Now it's $60. Okay, so that's 9 years, eight, 9 years. That's some kind of inflation there. It's still the same
cut.
Slice of prime rib. Nothing's changed, but it's right. Instead of $36, it's $60. And the a petite filet has also about the same, $35 when I got here. Now it's $60 for this little.
Been on the hunt for a prime rib roast for a few weeks now, trying to leading up to Christmas. I'm gonna figure I'm just gonna have to wait
Klarna,
it out a little while.
You can borrow money from Klarna at Costco. I was at Costco on Saturday, and I did look at $98 for a small prime rib roast.
Oh, man.
Trump pans and insures. I saw a good interview with Bill Cassidy of Louisiana, who is a doctor. And they're looking for a way to replace, go around the insurance companies, which I think they're going to have to do. That's not good for the insurance companies, but to give the money, they're looking at just bypassing the insurance companies and putting the money right into HSA accounts for people. So that then they can choose, okay? So anyways, that's happening in the background. That could impact the medical, the insurers. That does not look to be a very promising group in 2026 as we look ahead. The biotech sector, though, which is part of that medical and healthcare sector, it's had a pretty good year, probably one of the better years that I've seen. However, if you just bought the biotech ETF, you're only up like 8% this year. You kind
of
have
a lot of volatility, by the way.
You have to bag some of those big winners that get bought out by the larger drug companies, or have a hit like we saw yesterday with the sickle cell anemia. It's a very difficult sector to play unless you're in it and kind of know what's going on and know where the possibilities are. There's a few good, really good biotech analysts on Seeking Alpha that I follow. They have mentioned and written about several before they were bought out. So that's another idea in that biotech sector. The large pharma, it's had a decent year, but, that's another tough one. There's only a few good ones in that whole landscape there in that sector. Here's another company getting into private credit, Toronto Dominion Bank, TD, which we have a lot of in our area. It expanded its range of credit solutions with a sub-investment grade global private credit strategy. No thanks. That's what I say to that. I think it has the potential to be a bigger mess at some point down the road than the whole mortgage crisis that we had in 2008-2009, which almost brought down our financial system. They continue to go down this road of private credit.
And it's a search for yield. I mean, I just did a screen, this morning before the show, and just because, interest rates have moved up, so yields have gotten better, bond prices have gotten better, went and looked at, some prices for some corporate, investment-grade corporates between, 3 to 6 years, and literally everything that comes up first with the most yield, it's all, Blue Owl, Centene, some other, you've got even JP Morgan private credit, right? Or something,
Garbage.
All in that nature, right?
Yes. Well, when we come back, Lilly succeeds in a late-stage trial as a first-line option in lymphoma. That's a pretty big deal. And a lot of companies are giving guidance right now. This is guidance season. We heard from Home Depot today, Pepsi, AT&T, and Exxon. And I want to take a look at the track records of these companies to see if maybe there's something there for 2026.
Hello. We'll be right back.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
Welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. So is this a big story or not? Well, I always look at the reaction of the stock. Lilly's Jaypirca succeeds in late-stage trial as a first-line option in lymphoma. So what I do is I take a look and see how the stock is, just like how is NVIDIA reacting to this news that they can sell their H200 chips to China. It's down 0.5%, so it's just kind of yawning like this is a non-story. Let's take a look and see how Lilly is reacting to this news here today. Well, it's up $3.54. It likes it a little bit. It lost its trillion-dollar status. Lilly did hit a trillion 2 weeks ago. And then it's been selling off. You know, they've been lowering their price. There's some negotiations that have been going on. Some deals have been made to get it into Medicare. So I would just say that this story is not that big of a story for Lilly, but it is up a little bit here. And Lilly's been in a downtrend for the last couple of weeks after hitting that $1 trillion, which isn't unusual. You know, I've seen that happen a lot. You see a big milestone made by a company, and you see people selling into that big milestone, and eventually the selling abates, and it begins to appreciate. I don't think Lilly is done. I don't think Lilly has saturated the world with their miracle drug. I think they have a lot further to go. So I think it's a keeper for now. ASML drops amid report that at least one customer has links to the Chinese military. So, okay, that's the other piece of the puzzle. China does not have the equipment to make the chips. Even if they did have the algorithms, the code, all of this and that that they need to create their own Blackwell chip, they don't have the equipment, but I'm sure they're on it, Barry. I don't think that they're sitting on the sidelines not trying to come up with their own equipment, which ASML out of the Netherlands, a big piece of the Netherlands economy, by the way. And this is also a non-news item because there's hardly any kind of reaction.
Restricted. Yeah, and they've already been restricted, by the way. I mean, I think that even the Biden administration was trying to restrict ASML from providing that equipment to China, even in that administration. And so it's one of these things where, we do Pinewood Derby, Pinewood Derby cars, and I'm sure China's over there doing ASML. machines, right?
Yeah, absolutely. They're trying to come up with their own. It's very highly sophisticated equipment. Ah, man, I don't know. We've come so far. I had clients in San Diego that worked for Cymer, And Symer's in the equipment industry, but I doubt that it's even touches what ASM lithography is doing over there in the Netherlands. So anyways.
Well, then you got to test it. You know, the other thing is those testing companies. Remember we owned one of those smaller testing companies a few years back. And, you know, the other thing is not only do you got to have the equipment to make the chip, you got to, you know, they make the chip and then you got to test the chip to make sure it's doing what it's supposed to be doing. So there's a lot of different components and why, right? It's one of the reasons why we don't have a lot of chip manufacturing, especially on the sophisticated side here in the U.S. yet.
I mean, yes. Big. Yep. Well, okay. Now it is guidance season, as we are approaching. We're about 4 to 5 weeks away from the next earnings season. And not only that, companies are now guiding for 2026 for the entire year. So what you want to see is major upgrades to the guidance. Reaffirming the guidance, that's okay. I mean, at least that's better than lowering the guidance. But I always go and look at the track records of these stocks. Now, Home Depot, for instance, which is a member of the Dow, I was talking to a friend of mine over the weekend. His family owns a major building supply company. It has 123 warehouses and distribution centers across America. Lansing Building Supplies. And I was talking to him about Home Depot, and he says, you know, Home Depot is trying to really go after the contractors. That's where they see trying to bring some kind of growth back to the company. But, you know, if you look at the recent quarters at Home Depot, it is really sluggish. It's almost dead, the growth there. The most recent quarter, their sales were up 3% year over year, and their earnings were flat. There's the biggest problem, their earnings. They're looking for 0% growth in earnings next year versus this year. So they're reaffirming their guidance. And what you see in the pattern of Home Depot's performance is a major, major deceleration of returns for shareholders. So it would not be on any list that I have. Other than I do look at it on a regular basis as kind of a proxy for a big industry out there. But as far as the returns, which I always look at first, and I guarantee you that a lot of people listening to the show own Home Depot. It's a very highly, it's a widely held stock. It's a favorite of the institutions. Nobody's going to complain about having Home Depot in their portfolio, unless they do what I do, and that's look at the returns of the stock over the years, especially recently. Now, over the last 3 years, you've gotten a return of 5.6% in Home Depot per year. That's the average. The S&P 500 is 23.8. So now you've got a stock, and I don't see... It's hard for me to imagine Home Depot outperforming the S&P 500 in the coming 3 years. If you're seeking alpha, you're certainly not going to look to Home Depot. Over the last 12 months, Home Depot is down 16%, while the S&P is up 13%. So that totally eliminates it for me, unless there's some value here, and now it's maybe become a Buffett stock. Well, I can't make a case from a valuation point of view either. I think you're going to get these activist managers coming in there and trying to get them to change something to squeeze more value. But I currently have a valuation of just 40% upside potential over the next 5 years, which is an F. I want 80% or more. So there's nothing about Home Depot that I like here at Gunderson Capital Management other than it's a blue chip name that's widely held and in a lot of portfolios. If you've got a portfolio at J.P. Morgan or if you've got a portfolio at Raymond James or Morgan Stanley or Merrill Lynch, you're more than likely going to own Home Depot in that portfolio. It does not meet. I would not consider it to be a best stocks now. Was it at one time? Oh, wow, yes. It was one of the great stocks of all time. I was reading about Ken Langone, who has a home in North Carolina at Cashers. I don't know if you read that article. That was an interesting article about, I have a friend that lives in Cashers. They have a second home. Everybody has a second home in Cashers. Right, right. They absolutely love it. I mean, they're at 3,500 feet elevation. It's about 4 hours from where we are, Barry. My neighbor.
It's in North Carolina, right?
Or yes, kind of, in the hills of North Carolina. My neighbor, who's a retired Army colonel, he has a home in Cashers. We don't see him hardly anymore. He's up in Cashers most of the time, especially when it's 98 degrees in Charleston in August and 98% humidity.
Yeah, they're all up. Spelled like cashiers for all
it's
the
spelled
rest
like
of us
cashiers.
Yeah.
And there's more billionaires in that little neck of the woods per square inch or square mile or whatever. Langone is there, who was one of the founders of Home Depot. Very wealthy guy. The Tabasco McCormick is there, who's the head of the Tabasco sauce.
Oh, the McCormick spices, you know, not far from there, I would imagine. Close
I don't
down
know
in,
if
towards
I think it's
Gatlinburg,
just the hot sauce. I think it's just the hot sauce McCormick. Okay. There must be, but that McCormick family. So anyways.
You got Bush's Baked Beans, you know, their headquarters is not, probably an hour and a half from there.
Yeah, I've seen their silo. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's
Navy beans, you know, and then painted on the silo. Okay, when we come back, we've got a few others to look at that are guiding for 2026. Some big ones, some big names. What's their track record been? That's where I go first. We'll be right back.
On a winter's day. You gotta go.
And welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. The other one that's, there's several, but another one in play today. Elliott Management is one of the big ones that goes in there and tries to get them, put their people on the board of directors and shake up the company and everything. Another very soggy stock out of New York, Pepsi. All right, and I bring these up because, hey, these are what you don't realize how many people across America who have a portfolio with a big firm own these stocks like Pepsi and Home Depot. AT&T is another one that's in the news today. Coca-Cola. They're in almost every portfolio that I see that comes in from a large Wall Street firm. Okay, let's just take a look at the returns of Pepsi, which has been around. I remember drinking Pepsi in the 60s, so that's quite a while. I think it's as old as I am, Barry. I remember at my grandmother's house, she would pull out four bottles of cold Pepsi in a bottle, flip the cap, and we'd watch Bonanza on a Sunday evening.
Oh, yeah.
It was such a treat, right, to have this was back in the 60s. In Bakersfield, California, when we used to go up and visit Grandma A. I had a Grandma A and a Grandma B. That's how we knew the difference between them. One's name started with A and the other started with B. Okay, let's take a look at Pepsi's return. Would this be a part? You've got a 25-man roster. Baseball season opens on early April, mid-April, something like that. You got to have the 25 best players in your portfolio. Over the last 5 years, Pepsi has averaged 3% a year. That's what you've got in as a total return, 3% per year. Over the last 3 years, you've lost 4.2% per year. And over the last 12 months, it's down 5% while the market's up 12.7. So if I'm sitting at home and listening to the Best Stocks Now show or driving to work or whatever the case may be, I would look in my portfolio, whoever is managing it, and see if I own Pepsi or see if I own Home Depot, and I would scratch my head and say, shouldn't this be replaced with something with a little bit more life? Well, okay, then the second thing is the performance has been terrible, just awful. The second thing you can do is you can say, well, maybe this is now in Warren Buffett territory where it's a value stock. And he does. He owns Coca-Cola, I think, which has got about the same performance as Pepsi. I see a couple of big guys at Berkshire Hathaway left the firm.
Right, yeah.
And went to work. One went to work for J.P. Morgan. And, you know, I just don't think that Berkshire Hathaway is going to outperform the S&P 500 in any way, shape, or form in the coming 5 to 10 years. I really
don't.
Not with that
cash anchor. I mean, you know, you're getting they're getting drugged down. I mean, it's nice to have that big old pile of cash, but at the same time, it's an underperforming asset, particularly compared to the market. And so, when they're going to have that cash drag for that long, it's hard to overcome.
Well, not only the cash drag, but they own stocks like these ones we're talking about, mostly because mostly it's these kinds of stocks. Pepsi's upside potential over the next 5 years is 39.6%. That's a value grade of F. F. It fails. It flunks. And the performance grade of Pepsi, when I grade it against all the other stocks to choose from, it's a D. So I would question my advisor, my money manager, if they had me in either of those two stocks. But there's a big effort here to come in and shake things up. I just don't think it would make that much of a difference to get this to be a performing stock once again. The other one that's guiding here today, and we've talked about it many, many times, as being one of the worst stocks in the entire market, and that's AT&T, okay? They're guiding today, and who cares, really? I mean, this has been
a... I was going to say, where are they guiding to?
they're reassuring, okay? They're what do they call that? They're reaffirming their guidance for 2026. And it has the same problems. It's so large, and its business continues to be whittled away at. I mean, look at streaming. Look at the internet. How many competitors there are offering internet? Look at telephone service. Really, the only thing they have going anymore. I mean, a lot of people have their. I write a pretty decent check to AT&T every month because I have internet with them and I have my cell phones with them, but it certainly hasn't helped the stock. Over the last 10 years, it's a 5.7%. 5.7% has been the average return. It's been a little bit better lately. Over the last 12 months, it's up 8.9%. But this would be another one. Why would I take up, let's just say I had $100,000 portfolio, or $100,000, which gives me, let's say, $5,000 to invest in 20 stocks. Why would I invest $5,000 of my dollars into any one of these three stocks and expect, better than average returns in the coming years? It just isn't going to happen unless, you know, something really major happens. But they are reiterating. And then the other one, here's a company that's actually guiding higher. ExxonMobil. It's another one. Every portfolio that comes to us from a big firm has Exxon or Chevron in it, or both. More than likely, they have both stocks. Buffett owns, he's been just gobbling up Occidental Petroleum.
And I was looking at that. That actually popped up on my list today in terms of when I was doing the bond screen, and it didn't. They're their coupon rate is like over 7%. Of course, it's not trading
really
now, but that, I mean, that just, I'm like, that kind of scared me when I looked at it in terms of
wow,
debt cost.
That's surprising. You know, I would take a look at those bonds if that's the. I mean, if it's good and right. if it's past all of Buffett's screens,
right? Yeah.
It's got to.
It's one I got on my list of passwords.
Okay, take a look at that one. Okay, now we're out of time. I was going to do Oxfam, but we're out of time. Look, if you want to own the best, you want to own stocks that at least have a fighting chance. You know, to at least you know, give you market returns, not sub market returns over the next 3 to 5 years. It's just not going to happen with these big dinosaurs, these big soggy stocks. Give us a call at 855-611-BEST. We make no guarantees, but we work hard to try to find the best ones. Get the newsletter, GundersonCapital.com. GundersonCapital.com.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.